Hello and welcome to the FVE English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world. Today we are going to be discussing the Liga FVE season so far. It's a natural point to look back at how things have been going. We are halfway through the first stage of the season. This season is two-staged. At the end of the first stage, the top two teams will go into one group. The third and fourth teams will go into another group. And then the top group will compete for Copa Libertadores qualification and, of course, the championship itself. And the second group will be competing for Copa Sudamericana qualification. Meanwhile, the bottom teams of each of the 7-team group will be facing relegation. Two of the three will be relegated automatically, with the third playing a playoff against a team from the second division. So, Kevin and Dominic are with me today. We'll start with Dominic. Where have the talking points come from this first half of the season? You can open the floor and then we can get into them.
Sure. Well, one thing that comes to mind right away is that each group has more or less had a surprise team that struggled pretty significantly in 2020 and has done quite well this season so far. The three teams that come to mind for me in regards to that are Portuguesa, Monagas, and Gran Valencia. All three of those teams, off the top of my head, finished outside of the knockout spots last season and close to the bottom of the table. Monagas, I believe, were the second worst team that season, just ahead of Carabobo. And all three are doing fantastic. Monagas is top of the table right now, although Caracas played tonight. And Portuguesa, very similarly poised to compete for the top two spots, Gran Valencia as well. So there's a lot to get into with those three teams, but big talking point for me is the surprise ascensions of all three after a really rough 2020.
Yeah, and I think if we carry on with that, the three teams you mentioned are three teams that didn't actually change their managers from last season to this season. Portuguesa is still with Jose Alicanas, although he now is benefiting from Franklin Lucena as an assistant after his retirement at the end of 2020. Gran Valencia have got Pomponio Morales, who's been at Gran Valencia for many seasons now. And Monagas is still under the helm of Johnny Ferreira. But to me, at least, Portuguesa and Monagas have definitely changed their playing styles from 2020 to 2021. Kevin, would you agree that those three are the biggest changes from 2020?
Yes. Well, first of all, hi to everyone. Glad to be back here. And yes, and even a good spot that this season has is that the three leaders are like the big potences, the big potents and the powerful teams of football. And the second, they are like the surprise, the revelation. But Monagas, it has been always a good team in football, at least in the last 6 years. I think it was more like a hard situation they had in the 2020, and these they are demonstrating what they are, because they had good players the last season and they have good players to this. For example, Let Ortiz, he was with Monagas the last season. Ah, no, he was with Trujillanos too. Well, Let Ortiz is Franklin Gonzalez, Grandi Peroso, or all of them are top players. The big surprise, yes, I think it is Gran Valencia, and I feel that they have been a bit luck, and even you can see it in the statistics. There is not like a leader player in any, you know, like in anything, and we can show in the last match they lost 4-1 and 5-1 against Deportivo Lara.
Yeah, and that whole group, sorry.
No, come on.
To your point of, is it luck? What are other factors? That whole group is very strange right now statistically. Right, you have the third place team has only scored 9 goals, right? While the fifth place team has 21. So there's a lot that doesn't really make sense about that group. Jordan and I were talking earlier today about how many of the teams in this group are also from the group last year where Yaracuyanos were top for a while, and then they dropped, to fifth, I think it was. And you had a lot of Lara and La Guaira moved around a lot. So Gran Valencia, I don't think was in that group, but there's a lot that feels very uncertain about all of these teams. Even like Guaira, some weeks it feels a little uncertain if they're going to be where they are the whole season. So it's definitely there's I have as much skepticism as Kevin on that front.
Yeah, and to orientate our listeners, we are at the mid stage at the point of recording when this podcast comes out. We'll be one game over the midpoint. How the groups are looking, Deportivo Táchira top their group with Estudiantes de Mérida and Portuguesa in second and third. Deportivo La Guaira, the 2020 champions, top their group with Gran Valencia surprisingly in second. And as Dominic pointed out, low scoring Academia Puerto Cabello in third place. And in the final group, Monagas are top as it stands, but by the time this records, it's most likely Caracas in second would have retaken top spot. And Mineros are third. As much as Gran Valencia have surprised all of us, I think for me, another surprise is how well Mineros are doing, mainly because 2020 for them was a struggle that they accomplished, like they ultimately qualified for Copa Sudamericana, but every game felt very forced. They really had to fight for every point, and they did. And that's why they ended up qualifying for Sudamericana. But then at the end of the season, you know, their team was gutted of a lot of their best players. You know, Brian Hurtado has gone on loan to Chile for the season. Richard Blanco obviously left their talismanic striker. He's at Puerto Cabello. You know, and that's just two examples. And Mineros, if you have been following the season this year, it's very easy to see how young their team is, because most League of Football teams in their graphics will put an asterisk or the date of birth next to their players that are under 20. And when you look at Mineros' team, you know, over half of their players are under 20 quite regularly. And they've only got like two, maybe three players off the bench as options that aren't these young kids. So they've really surprised me. And I know Kevin has had a lot of praise for Mineros this season. So like, Kevin, why do you think Mineros are doing in hindsight and in fairness so well?
Well, the first match, or I think it was the first, I watched of Venezuelan teams this season. It was Copa Sudamericana, Mineros versus Aragua. They do 1-1, and it was when Pedro Zaragoza, 18 years old winger, arrived to the game, and he makes like an amazing play, and he centered to Ryan Alcocer, another young player of 17 years old, and they scored. The second match, it was the first I attend on 2021. It was Mineros Aragua, also here in Caracas, and it finished 2-2. And Mineros needed to score because they were losing for away goal or the away goal rule. And Mineros was full of young players. You have the list, the paper, and it was all young players, and I was very, very impressed how that guys played and could put down all their our teams, which is full, of course, of very good players and experimented. So after of that, I said, wow, Mineros fans have to be pride, because those kids and those young players put the colors of the Mineros high as it has always been before.
And one thing that we can't look over is the fact that in the past 48 hours, their top scorer, Francisco Caravalli, has come out and said that he and many of his teammates are owed 4 months' salary. So not only have Mineros had a close season where they've lost a number of star players, but the players that are still there, and even the players that have come in new, for example, Jesus Marimon from Colombia, are unpaid for essentially half of this year so far, if not more. Yet they're third in their group. They went out again last night and got a good point against Monagas. Obviously, Monagas wrongly had a goal disallowed at the death. But, you know, Mineros are where they are through hard work, despite off-field challenges. And it's not just Mineros who are in this situation. Unfortunately, this has been a week where a lot of the news, if it's not been about new transfers, because the transfer window is open at the moment, and we'll get onto that in a minute, but has mainly been about club debts. We've had Mineros, like I said, with Caravalli coming out. We've had Richard Figueroa, the top scorer of Zamora with six goals, come out and say that he is also owed I think he said 3 months' wages. And last night, Joel Infante scored a hat-trick for Atletico Venezuela to get them a 4-1 win over Metropolitanos. And in the post-match conference, he took the opportunity to say he is owed 4 months' salary as well. And we know that it isn't just them. Trujillanos have played 13 games this season, have lost all 13, scoring only 4 goals and conceding 49. And it's become a situation with Trujillanos in particular, and I imagine Dominic will feel the same. But when I'm covering those games live, doing the live tweeting of it, I feel bad for writing goal in capital letters when the opposition score, because, you know, it's just not a fair playing field. There are a lot of young players playing their first competitive season in the Venezuelan top flight, unlikely not being paid, unlikely not being looked after very well. And it's frankly embarrassing situation. And it's not escaped the top clubs either. This week, Deportivo Táchira, we hear, owe $250,000 to Samuel Sosa, a former player. And we also hear that Caracas owe just under $500,000 in bonus money, I believe, from the 2019 season. So off field, there are problems that continue to play Liga Footvay. And I just wanted to ask Kevin about some on the ground opinions of how we've got to this situation, because I know you've made a very, to me, very insightful, emotive post on Unse Footvay's Instagram account.
Yes, well, like everything in the world, in a capitalism, you need someone to buy your product to get the money. So if we cannot pretend to have 21 teams in first division, and for example, just 8 receive money of all the 21, because the teams in Venezuela, I would say that the most of them, they do not receive money for tickets, even before the pandemic. They do not receive money because of tickets, for marketing. A sponsor is very few money. And also, you know, like buying the shirts, etc. So how can we pretend to got so many teams if we are not in the reality of Spain, of United States, of Argentina, in which the football clubs are millionaire because it's a massive consume. It doesn't happen here. We have to be in our ground and say, okay, Venezuelan football is loved in Venezuela, but Venezuelan football is not loved in Venezuela. We have to look for, to search keys in order to attract the public that in Venezuela is also buying things. And there are a certain percentage of people that have money, but they are not attracted to Venezuelan football. So we have to look for and search keys, tools to attract them.
And I think it's to sway away from football for 1 minute, just because, you know, a lot of people, what they do know about Venezuela is going to be focused on economic situations. I know that in 2021, the dollar has become sort of legal tender in Venezuela, whereas, you know, before, despite the fact it had large-scale prevalence in the country, it was essentially not legal tender. And I know we've had conversations this year, Kevin, where you feel if it wasn't for COVID last year, the economy probably would have improved quite a bit in the past 12 months because of the dollar. And you're saying that you're seeing new businesses open, you're seeing people with more money to spend. Could you just tell us a little bit about how that has improved, just, you know, away from football and just Venezuelan life in general?
Yes, because the dollarization has been very extended in our country. The big problem before, it was that you have bolivares and the next day the value was less. So now the people doesn't get his salary, or at least their economy in bolivares is in dollars. So the bolivares will be decreasing and decreasing, but the people has dollars or change their bolivares salary in dollars immediately because the dollars are everywhere. So that's the difference. Now in 2019, when you were here, it was harder to a person spend at least $5 in a football match. Now it's much more possible.
And to get back to the football now, I just wanted to take a minute or two to discuss Gran Valencia, just because their season has been so impressive. But do we think they can keep it up, Dominic?
You know, there are aspects of this team that are impressive. Angel Osorio's had a very good year, and you know, there are things that would give me hope, but I can't help but be pretty pessimistic when you have Deportivo Lara doing well in the final third, maybe needing to clean things up in the back. You have them a couple points, only 5 points off, so many games left. Puerto Cabello, it's hard to read what to think of them, but you know, do they start to pick things up, get some points? I have a feeling that they won't finish top two. They might get into the Sudamericana bracket. I have a feeling they won't finish top two.
And who do you think would take their place? Because I think, although La Guaira have not been the La Guaira of last season, I think some of that can be put down to Farias really giving the Libertadores a good go. Ultimately, they didn't make it out of their group and they didn't even make Sudamericana knockouts, but he did heavily rotate in the first half of the season and still managed to keep himself there or thereabouts. In fact, you know, they are now top. Six draws, so they've drawn half their game, but they are now top. And I think Puerto Cabello could lose Matias Lacava to Santos in the next week or so. And Deportivo Lara could lose Jesus Bueno to Philadelphia Union, is the discussion. So that's two contenders for Gran Valencia losing their arguably best player.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a chance that they manage to maintain. I still do think that Lara, or I think of the three, I would go with Lara, Deportivo Lara, as the one that would usurp them. Partially because we saw it basically happen the same last year, but you know, I'm not gonna bet any money on this. But I just have a bad feeling. I have a bad feeling about how the rest of the year is gonna go for them.
So we've discussed teams so far, and we discussed the overall landscape of Liga Footvey at the midpoint. I think it would be good to discuss some standout players. Of course, a lot of our listeners are going to be new to Venezuelan football and are probably following Venezuelan football out of like a curiosity. So it would be good to give the listeners a good idea of who is performing well in Liga Footvey this season, and perhaps even players that are, you know, we could see in Europe next year or America, thanks to performances. So Kevin, to put you on the spot, because I've not allowed you to prepare for this, do you think you could maybe give us your star player and star young player from each one of the three groups, and then Dominic, the same for you?
Okay, a player that for me is impressive and very, very good is the Panamian that Deportivo. Well, of course, it was worked for Yaracuyanos, but that which is already in Deportivo Táchira, Freddy Gondola. I think he's very, very good player, and he has the quality to be in other South American leagues, being a good player too. And the good young player, of course, there would be also Gerson Chacon. I like him. I like him so much. Even he's a very good person. We knew him in Caracas in 2019 and in San Cristobal too. Very talented. He's quick and good passing and good way of dribbling, etc. In the central group, my preferred, it's harder there, of course. I think that all the good players, all of the best players, are in between La Guaira and Lara. But a good surprise could be, well, of course, Juan Camilo Perez. I forgot him. Juan Camilo Perez has been amazing in all the stats in this season, and is a player not known in Venezuela. Very good technique, very good passing. Maybe he could increase his stamina. Maybe in the last minutes of the match, he's walking more than in the first minutes and in the half. So maybe that's his bad point. And in the other group, I'd say the star is Akinyola for sure. I think he's Yes, he's the best stranger in football. Very talented. I think he could be in Europe. He's the player I would say he can be playing in a Europa League. And a young player in that group. Well, I think there wouldn't be... well, of course, my favorite player is Bachila. But there wouldn't be like an outstanding young player. Riasco did good things yesterday. Not past yesterday, but there we have to give him time.
And Dominic, do you concur with any of Kevin's opinions, or do you have your own personal favorites?
I mean, I think they were all good picks. I'm thinking of alternatives. Someone to point out, I suppose, for Occidental, I agree with Chacon. He's been fantastic. Maybe an alternative older player, just someone that's stood out and also stood out as a foreign player, is Adrian Fernandez. You know, he's up there in the goals, 7 goals. The team's only scored 19. So it's a fair bit of them, and one of the main reasons they're as high as they are on the table. Great from him, and he's been fun to watch. I've watched a decent amount of the Portuguesa games this season. For Central, I think, you know, we've talked a little bit here and outside of this podcast about LaGuira looking a little better recently. I definitely think they've benefited. And you were just talking about some of the challenges they've had. I think they've also benefited from having all those guys that went into the Vinotinto camp back. Some defenders that have returned, like Martinez, it's good to see him back recently.
Made an offline line clearance as well. Obviously, they beat Aragor 5-0, but, you know,
right.
In a game that they were 3-0 up after 20 minutes, to show the heart to get back to clear off the line.
Absolutely.
The sign of his quality.
It's a really good follow-up to his Copa America run. And, you know, so I think, obviously not scoring much, but I think he's a name to keep an eye on, just as LaGuira continued to kind of develop the season. Oriental, Ortiz, obviously, for Monagas has been great. So, you know, I'll throw his name back out there. Scoring a lot of goals, just looks good on the ball, on the wing as well. So, yeah.
And I think it would be wise to pick up on Kevin's suggestion of the player in the Central group, Juan Camilo Perez, for two reasons. A, Carabobo, bottom of that group. So for one of the standouts of the whole group to come from the team at a bottom is worth picking up on. And also Richard Paez, the former Venezuela manager from 2001 to 2007, is also a fan of Juan Camilo Perez. And that is a good indication of a talented technical player. So I think that's a player that we could keep our eye on for either maybe a move to one of the top Venezuelan clubs in the summer, or perhaps even going overseas. So having touched upon some of the best players in the league, young and not old, but young and over 20, let's cast an eye on some of our predictions for the season as it's going to go on from here. So Kevin, we'll start with you again. Who do you think will win each respective group, and who do you think are going to finish bottom of each respective group?
Well, something that I always like complain in my mind is that the people is seen very important to finish top in each group. And that's not important. And there is no difference between finishing second or the first place. For example, people telling the mistake about Monagas yesterday, blaming Caracas FC. And it's like Caracas FC wouldn't do anything for finish first or second. It's the same for them. Their competency is maybe that Mineros or Metropolitanos or Atlético Venezuela doesn't get very well. And, well, my prediction would be, I think that the West group, Táchira, it's not arguable. He would be in the final, the final round. Even I think they are the favorites to be champions. They play very, very good. The players, the collective, very competing. It would be a very good competition between Caracas, Táchira, Monagas, and La Guaira. Very good teams, the four. Táchira with Portuguesa, I think, because Estudiantes de Mérida suffer the injuries of Christian Flores and La Pulga Gomez. And the central group, I think it would be La Guaira for sure. And the second, I think it would be Lara, because Lara has more talented players in all the lines. And I feel as Dominic that Gran Valencia will go down. In the East group, I think, of course, it would be also Caracas and Monagas, without doubt. And to the relegation, the hardest is in the central group. And I think, wow, that's hard. I feel it will be, it's hard because Aragua has very good players. Carabobo have very good, signed players.
And between already signed four players this window.
Yes, exactly. So I think that they will put better and they are playing well. I don't know. I'd say just Yaracuyanos defend very well, but I'd say Carabobo because I feel that Aragua has very good team, very good players. And in the East, Lala.
Yeah. I personally don't disagree. Dominic, would you agree with Kevin, or do you have any alternative suggestions?
I think I agree with everything he said. I for Occidental, I think Portuguesa jump Estudiantes. Estudiantes have some good explosive matches, score a lot of goals overall, but I think Portuguesa just have more maturity. I think they're gonna get into the next stage there. And yeah, I agree with all his other two. Relegation. Obviously, Trujillanos are getting relegated. Lala probably. It's a shame for my roots in this state, but but I think Carabobo are going down too. I think they're going to finish bottom, but I think they're going to have to play the playoff and they'll win.
Exactly. Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think the big discussion would be who finished in the hexagonal B.
Yeah,
I think it's harder. Maybe in the East group, it's very raw. The fight between Atlético Venezuela, Metropolitanos, Mineros, and UCB is increasing.
Yeah,
and well, in the Central, everyone could finish there, and in the West, it's good the fight which is that's having Zamora, Hermanos Colmenares, Zulia maybe, and well, who finished third between Estudiantes and Portuguesa.
And just for listeners to pick up on what Kevin said, when he refers to hexagonal B, he's referring to the second stage, where in the second stage the top two teams from each of the three groups will play in hexagonal A. They each play each other twice to compete for the championship and Libertadores qualification. And hexagonal B is third and fourth place from each group competing in a group against each other twice for Sudamericana qualification. I want to talk about Hermanos Colmenares, but we'll come to it in a minute because Kevin has just picked up on Useve. Daniel Sasso has come in three or four games ago now and completely changed their potential for this season. And I just wanted to ask Kevin about it because Sasso is somebody Kevin knows personally as a coach, having been coached by him when he was a young player. But Kevin, what can you tell us about Sasso, and did you expect him to have such an impact?
Well, Sasso was my coach when I was between 7 and 11 years old. He was like a father when I was a kid, and I was very happy when he arrived to UCB. And well, what I remember, he's very attentive to your players, very very praiseful, and he encouraged so much to his players. And then my best friend played with him when he was in under 16 in national. And he was champion with him. And he told me that, well, I saw to some trainings, and Sasso liked so much the offensive football. And when I was to deliver Cesar Salazar, he was the best player of the week for Once Football in the 12th week. Salazar told me that the thing that changed Sasso in UCB is that he increased the confidence to all the players. And you can see it in the matches, how UCB is always going to the attack, even they are player with more strikers than before, I think.
And what I've been most impressed with is how he's gone from a team that were looking like they were probably going to either finish bottom or maybe second from bottom if Lala couldn't replicate the wins that they picked up against Caracas against anyone else. So a team that should be short of confidence into a team that's taken the initiative to try and win every game since, regardless of the opposition. He's played in a 4-2-4 formation. He's rotated the strikers in such a way that all three of the main strikers, Salazar, Mosquera and Febres, have kept confidence and have been scoring since he's come in. And also, he changed the defence. He dropped Hector Acosta, who hasn't played since he came in. So he's made some big, big moves, and it's worked. Where do you think you say they ultimately could climb up the table this season? Should the priority just be avoiding relegation, or is there an outside chance of finishing fourth, do you think?
I'm sure their priority is finishing between the third or the fourth place, but it will be hard. Today will be the first big challenge of UCB, which will be playing against Caracas in UCB. That would be a very good match, and that would be of also a trial for them and the spectators to see how they behave.
So, like I said, I wanted to talk about Manos Colmenares, and Dominic is well positioned to. And I almost feel like we were given a cheat code when it came to knowing how well they could do this season, because we were informed by Simon Edwards, a Colombian football expert, that Juan Camilo Zapata was an absolute crack, an outstanding talent. And last season, Dominic and I watched quite a bit of the second division. That's where Hermanos Colmenares were last season. It's worth stating again, because they've done so well this season. But we saw Zapata and what he was capable of in the second division and weren't surprised when he replicated it this season. Do you think Hermanos Colmenares are still being overlooked for perhaps causing an upset in the ultimate finishing places this season, Dominic?
A little bit. I think between Zapata and Peláez, they have two really, really dangerous players. The concern, obviously, is that they also concede a lot. For the amount of goals they've scored, their goal differential is four, is plus four. So if they can find ways to play without the ball better, I think they absolutely can finish above Zamora and Zulia. I mean, they've already shown that they can beat those teams or get draws against those teams. I think it's completely possible that they get fourth. And even if they get fifth, I mean, that seems like a pretty solid first season up from promotion. But I wouldn't be incredibly surprised if they manage to get fourth.
Yeah, and they've got two of the three highest rated foreigners in the league, according to Instat. Juan Camilo Zapata has the highest Instat rating of 246. Second is Samson Akinyula, the Beninese striker for Caracas, at 242. And thirdly is Wilmer Gonzalez at Hermanos Colmenares with 236. Kevin, during the week, you said to me when we were crunching the data and producing these graphics for the midway point that not many people know about Juan Camilo Zapata. I found that, like, you know, A, probably accurate, but B, quite insightful when it comes to the relationship between Venezuelan football fans and Liga Footbay as a competition. What led you to say that at the midway point of this season, when Juan Camilo Zapata is one of the top scorers in the league, one of the best players, one of the most creative players, has some of the highest statistics for key passes, for aerial duels won, that not many people are going to know who he is?
Yes, because there are like two kinds of fans in even in each competition, and Venezuela has more of one. And those kinds of fans are one, the people that watch all the games or what they can watch, and the second is the fans that just watch the team the your teams play, and that's the most in Venezuela. That's the majority. You see in the Liga Football election of man of the match, man of the week, that the Táchira fans always vote for Táchira players. And even it happens, Caracas fan for Caracas player, and it's not only because they are their players. It's also because they just see their matches, and I can see it also when I make the Once Football each week. And there is someone complaining because, for example, Covea is not there, and so it's like, well, because the midfielder that is in the position that Covea could be make a hat trick. So didn't you watch that game? And so that's the majority, and that's happened so much.
Yeah, and I just found it, very, very insightful because it would be like saying not many Premier League fans knew about Riyad Mahrez halfway through his first season at Leicester. Like, yeah, he was new to the division, but you certainly knew who he was by the middle of the season. And Mahrez obviously went on to win the league with Leicester and then get his move to Manchester City. And equally, not of course on the same scale, but talk of Zapata now drawing attention of clubs abroad. But we'll have to leave it there and end the episode here. We've got less than 60 seconds left of recording. So thank you very much, Kevin and Dominic, for joining me and giving your ever insightful opinions. This was the FootBait English podcast. Thank you and see you next time.